Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Melio. Melio offers blood tests before, during, and after pregnancy, from non-invasive prenatal tests to general health checks, helping you and your family take control of their health. All Melio tests are conducted by trained professionals at locations throughout the UK, with the results sent directly to your phone or laptop. Plus, every test comes with a personal health report from a Melio doctor. Melio. The more you know about your health, the more you can do about it, and the best source of knowledge is your blood. To find out more or to find a location near you, visit meliohealth.co.uk/health-pregnancy. There'll be a link in the show notes. We've also recorded a bonus episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast with Melio doctor Donna Fullerton, where we take a closer look at non-invasive prenatal testing. Check out that bonus episode in season 4 of the Finally Pregnant podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello, how are you doing? I hope that you are well. I am off the back of a lovely day out yesterday with Ren. We went into London again, actually. Another Friday, another London trip, because last Friday we went into London for a hangout meetup in Regent's Park, which was amazing. We had a lovely picnic with loads of the members of the Finally Pregnant and Parenting Hangout, and it was just so good to meet people in real life finally. Those I hadn't met before, and just to have a hug and for all our little ones to meet, it was just, oh, it was bliss. It was bliss. But this week it was a family affair because we went in to meet Pops, aka my dad, Ren's aunties and lots of her cousins for a play in the Granary Square water fountains, a walk along the canal and a trip on a narrow boat or barge. Not sure if they're the same thing or not. And it was just, oh, it was heavenly. Being out and about with Ren is so much fun. And it's something that I'm really trying to treasure as much as possible. I guess, especially now we know that she won't have any siblings. I spoke about this on Instagram. Last week, we had our last midweek outing for a while. So Ren started nursery ages ago now, and she started on 12 weeks, and we have increased her hours as my work has allowed me to afford that and as my work has needed it. And from next week, she starts 3 full days. But up until then, she was had a short day on a Wednesday. So she does Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays. And on a Wednesday afternoon, I pick her up at 3:30, and then we go out and quite often have like a baby chino or something like that, you know, a bit of mummy and Ren time. And knowing that last week was the last time we were going to do that, it was really special, and I took lots of pictures, and then I put my phone down and made a real point of spending that time with her and being really present in that. And it was lovely. And I have heard it said that we always generally recognize the first times, and like they're a massive deal, aren't they? The first time you see the smile, the giggle, the first word, the first walk. But it's really important to think of and remember the lasts as well, because before you know it, and I know this sounds insane saying it, and it's actually quite annoying when other people saying it, so I'm like saying this through a bit of a cringe, but it's true. Before you know it, they're going to uni or like leaving, moving out, all of that kind of thing. And it's really hard. And I think especially, like I say, because we've got one child, I really want to treasure everything. And so I remember a while ago, so before we knew we weren't going to have any siblings, taking a picture of like one of the last times we breastfed, so that I really, really remember it and treasure that. And yeah, that's what last week was for me when we went out for our last Wednesday afternoon baby chino. Baby Chino. Obviously, there'll be lots more, which my husband thinks is terribly middle class. I'm sorry about that, everyone. But it's just, like I said, it's just special memories and special time with Ren, which I adore. I'm trying to find a balance over on Instagram about what I post. So, you know, about things like that, but also about, you know, the finally pregnant and parenting support that I offer, you know, because I love what I do. I really do. But it's also a bit of a personal account. And also I am finally parenting. So, you know, that comes into it. But when it comes to my own fertility journey, the fact that I've been open the last few weeks and how I felt since our failed round, I don't usually pay that much attention to numbers like and followers, but I have noticed that I've lost loads of followers during that time. And whilst I know people come and go, and that's fine, you know, totally, I also wonder if it is because I used to offer people hope, but now, given my treatment didn't work, they aren't getting that from me anymore. And it's a funny one because I can't help but be a little bit upset. But I suppose what I'm upset about, I'm not upset, please don't get me wrong, I'm not upset, but I think I'm gutted actually that I can't offer that anymore. You know, I'm gutted for myself more than anyone, to be honest, without sounding horrible. But it's just that I am sorry that that is the case. Yeah, it's a really difficult one, isn't it? You know, because ultimately my previous round, the one that gave us Ren, went exactly how I planned. And, you know, let's face it, Ren is a beacon of hope. And I know that loads of people have told me that before. My point is, and while it's that I'm sorry, I guess, that I can't offer that hope that I used to, I hope that things like my podcast and things and where I talk to other people, and like I said, knowing that I have had Ren, do continue to give you that hope. But I also know that I'm offering other things as my journey moves forward, because there will be so many people, if not, I guess, everyone, who will come to the end of their TTC journey with various outcomes having been, quote unquote, achieved. And it is, I think, wherever you are, like whether you have no children, whether you have kind of four children. I was talking to someone just this morning, actually, who has got four, but wanted seven. But because of multiple loss, you know, she had to draw the line of four. And it was quite hard, you know, her saying four. I'm like, that would be more than enough for me. But we're all individuals. And I've said it before, and I'm going to put this on my Instagram again soon, you know, that everyone's pain is equal, but everyone's pain is valid. And it is, you know, wherever you are drawing the line, it is difficult. And I really hope that by sharing what I'm going through now, that will help lots of other people. And, you know, like I say, I totally know that people come and go. I guess wanted to recognize that and recognize that I appreciate that I'm not offering that hope necessarily in the way that I was even 8 weeks ago. And I get it, and that's okay. And I promise I will continue to show you hope in as many other ways as I can. And also, I can't remember whether I said this or someone else said this to me. I actually think someone else said this to me. I'm like showing a new hope, a different hope. The fact that, you know, the hope that was the forefront of my mind about children over the last 10 years, ultimately, that has gone. But now I've got a new hope for what is to come. And I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to that. And I do hope that I can have lots of other hope, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Can you tell I've totally gone off on my notes here? But yeah, and I hope that I hope, stop. I want that to be what I'm showing on Instagram, because that's my truth. And I want you to get lots from that. And now I'm going to stop talking about that, because I did go off on one a little bit. But I do genuinely hope that that's what you get from me. And if you want to chat about any of that, because it probably does need some unpicking, then just let me know. Right, moving onwards over to today's episode, where I've got a slightly different guest, actually. It's not a fertility patient, which is what this is generally about, fertility or loss, kind of, you know, parents or those who are pregnant. This is the daughter of one. This being the wonderful Emma, and her parents tried for many years to have children before exploring using donor IVF. So they had tried other routes of fertility treatment, and then they moved to donor and they had their little miracle Emma, who was their first daughter. They did then go on to have twin girls who are not donor. And that was because of changes in what was happening in fertility treatment at the time. And we touch upon that as well. And it's so interesting hearing from Emma's perspective. As you'll hear us mention, the only time I've ever heard anyone talk about being the child of donor conception, they really weren't happy about it. And I think that that's because of the way they found out that that had a huge impact on their feelings around it. But it's so refreshing and so wonderful to hear Emma talk about it, you know, because she's got the happiest, wonderful life, the happiest, wonderful family. And it's just really, really, I think, important to hear that, whether you are exploring or, you know, donor IVF, or you are pregnant currently with donor IVF or parenting. I think for all of us, it's just really important to hear her story that she tells so well and so generously and so openly. And she's also done that. So as well as her Instagram donor child, she's also done that via her book. And there'll be a link to everything, as always, in the show notes. And yeah, I'm just going to hand over to her to tell her story. But before I do, please do subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Go and do it now. You can do it whilst you're listening. You know, you just have to hit the 5 stars on your Apple. It is only on Apple. I'm sorry. But if you love the podcast and you're not on Apple, send me a DM on Instagram, send me an email, tell me why you love it, and I can share that anonymously or otherwise. But if you are on Apple, please do go and subscribe, rate, and review. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you next week. Take care. Bye-bye. In addition to this podcast, you'll find lots of other support for the wonderful Finally community over on my Instagram at tryingyears and at catstrawbridge.com. Examples of that support include the Finally Pregnant yoga and Pilates courses and a wonderful community called The Hangout. When you join The Hangout, which you can do whether you are pregnant or parenting, you'll receive a free meditation, access to 24/7 support, invitations to monthly speaker sessions and support groups, discounts, and lots more. Find out more about all of the support available to you at catstrawbridge.com. There's a link in the show notes. Hi there, Emma. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you here. I have to say, when I saw Donor Child pop up on Instagram, I was just like really, really intrigued. The only time that I have ever met someone, or kind of met an adult, I suppose, who is or was donor conceived, was several years ago when I worked at Fertility Network. And I have to say, they weren't that delighted about it. Like, my recollection of it is that the way it was introduced to them was quite traumatic. And I think obviously that is going to have a huge impact, isn't it? And it always stuck with me how sad that is for them. And it also always made me think about, you know, like, how do you share well? And what does that feel like? And so when you popped up, I knew I had to have you on the podcast, because we've had a lot of people who are conceiving through donor IVF, but never heard from the child's perspective. So it's incredible. So I've kind of, I suppose, laid it out there a little bit. But for those who haven't met you or haven't come across you on Instagram, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and why you're here, I guess?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Emma. I am 25 and from Denmark. So excuse me if my language is sometimes a bit odd. but yeah, I am donor conceived. I do have a mom and a dad. And also I have two younger sisters who are twins and who are made from the ICSI method. So they're actually my dad's biological parents. Yeah, and I've always known that I was donor conceived. We've been very, very open about it in our family. And then I studied to become a nurse. And while I was studying, I had a conversation with a friend who wanted to use the donor to conceive. And it sort of got me thinking that maybe people could benefit from me and my family's experience with donor conception, because everything, when I looked at the internet, everything I saw was very negative, and that was very different than my experience. And I wanted to share how we did so that people could benefit from that and use our experience to hopefully have families that were happy and loving, and where the donor conceived individual wasn't sad about their conception story. So I started blogging a bit about it. I have the website Donor Child Emma Grunbeck, and also I have recently written a book called Donor Child, A Child of Love, and now I've just started this Instagram. So yeah, it's been quite a journey. It's very overwhelming but amazing, and people are so nice. And yeah, I hope that people can benefit from my story and the things I tell and share.
I have absolutely no doubt that they are already and will continue to do so. Just to kind of completely different, but our pregnancy that gave us Ren was an identical twin pregnancy to start with, and we lost one of our twins. And I remember when I shared that on Instagram, someone contacted me and they were that surviving twin, you know, in their experience and in their family. And one of the things I'd always worried about was, will Ren kind of know and be aware and always be missing her twin? And they came to me, they messaged me and said, like, you know, I'm that surviving twin and it's never affected me negatively, like, please don't worry. And hearing that gave me such just, I guess, I'm trying to think of the word, just a real peace, I guess. So I imagine that that is what you can give to so many people, which is the most incredible gift, I can tell you. It really is. So it's incredibly special what you're doing. If we could perhaps start at the beginning. So you mentioned that your dad isn't your biological dad. So it is a sperm donor that we're talking about here. How did they tell you about it?
So I think my parents had 6 years of fertility treatment before I was a thing. And obviously they talked a lot about it to friends and family during that time, because it was really, everyone who has been in fertility treatment knows how hard that could be. And at that time, you would get advice from doctors not to tell the child, because you match the donor with, because I have a dad, they would just match with his appearance and his height and weight. So yeah, they were actually advised not to tell, but I think as they just went out from that conversation with the doctor and instantly knew that that was not a possibility for them. So they went home and I think put a lot of thought into how to share this very important piece of information with me. And they decided to make like a children's book with pictures of friends and families and my mom's drawings, and made it into like a love story about a couple who met each other, got married, wanted a child and had difficulties, in how I came to be with help from a nice man, as we've always called him, who was the sperm donor. So yeah, I had this book as a child and we read it as a nighttime story. And because it was about me and my family, I was very fond of it as a child. So we just read it loads of times, talked about it. I got to ask questions. They've always been just very open and honest. And I've always known and felt like I could ask anything and say what was on my mind.
And you are telling me that story with like a huge smile on your face. So clearly, you know, they have done an incredible job. Have you ever looked for your biological father for the sperm donor? I don't know if it is anonymous or not. And I guess things have changed perhaps in 25 years. So can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, so when I was conceived, you didn't have the choice. So it was only possible with anonymous sperm donors. So my donor's obviously anonymous. And actually, you get like a donor number. I don't even know the number. I haven't looked for anyone, actually. I haven't looked for my donor. I haven't looked for potential half-siblings, anything. But yeah, we've spoken about it in the family, and I know that if I ever wanted to, I would have the support from everyone, but I've never really felt a need, I think, because I feel like I have so much love and a big family, and yeah, I think I can't really imagine how it would benefit me. And I think I'm also a bit scared of, what if you build up a lot of expectations and then they are not met? And yeah, so no, I haven't really wanted to at any point so far. It might change, you never know.
That's it. But I think that's wonderful that you are just so content, you know, like, and so it's a maybe, but it's definitely not an essential, because yeah. I would imagine that could be quite a big question for someone who was thinking about donor conception. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, that's amazing that you are settled and that's not a concern or anything. Now tell me, so your parents did go on and had further fertility treatment, but not with a donor. Do you know why they made that decision?
So the ICSI method was very new at that point. So it wasn't a part of the treatment when I was conceived. So they knew it was something that was coming up, but obviously they'd been through fertility treatment for so long. I was the last little frozen embryo in the freezer. And my mom always explains it like they were just cleaning up the freezer because they had already given up hope and was almost through with adoption process. So, so I was not really expected. But yeah, they were really, really happy about it. But at that point, they didn't want to wait for the ICSI method to become a possibility because they had already gone through so much. But when my sisters were conceived, they're only like a little less than 2 years younger than me. So when they were conceived, that was a possibility, and they started quite soon after they had me because it took them so long the first time. So yeah, they had three small children within 2 years. So quite a lot of babies.
That's amazing, isn't it? And like, as someone who took 7 years to have my daughter, and I know lots of people listening will have been through, you know, and not necessarily talking here about periods of time, but just traumatic mm-hmm. journeys as well. And then we do hear, and actually I think I've been talking to a researcher recently, and the chances of a spontaneous pregnancy after an IVF birth are 1 in 5, you know, and you always think, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because everyone always says it, oh, you have one and then you will knock out a few more accidentally almost. Mm-hmm. And so like, I do hear that there are, you know, friends of mine who have got kind of 1, 2, 3 little ones under 2 or 3. And it is very special. I'm sure it is an absolute handful as well. But, you know, like, gosh, so, so well wanted and loved for sure. And how was that for you growing up? Like, I'm interested actually from a couple of different perspectives. So from a point of view of being a sibling to twins, how did that feel? Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, obviously with the difference in the donor conception and how that has made you feel perhaps at different stages of your life as well. So what's it like being a sibling to twins?
As a child, I think I was very jealous because I was this very, very wanted child. So I got so much attention until the twins came. So I think it was quite hard on me at that time. Other than that, I love the twins, but they have something being twins that I am not a part of and I will never be. So that can at some times be a bit challenging, mostly when we were younger. And I've also shared stories from when we went on vacation or something that when we were very intensely together for a longer period of time, it would be a bit more obvious that they were like my parents who were a couple, and then there were the twins who were obviously a couple as well, in a different way. And then I was like standing out a bit. So that has been challenging at some times, but I've always known that I had a very big part of the family, and yeah, we've always been very close, all three of us. So it hasn't really been a problem, but it can be challenging at times.
And I think that sometimes being a sibling, isn't it? Like, yeah. I've got three sisters, and because we are quite different, well, I feel like I'm a bit different to them. I don't know, but I can feel left out, terribly left out sometimes, which is really hard. And then with my infertility, I felt quite left out because I was the only one without babies. Like, as we go through life, it can be quite difficult. But I hear you with that kind of twin bond, perhaps, that twins have. And also, and it must be so hard, but like thinking about it from kind of being a parent to that perspective, like twins must just be like a baby is a handful. Do you know what I mean? But having two at a time and thinking of your parents having two and looking after you, like, it's just mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. But it's lovely to hear that you are all so incredibly close. That really is. And if you could talk to me a bit about how the donor conception part of the story has had any impact on you, like, for better or worse, perhaps, over the years?
Yeah. So I think one of the things I try to tell people is that it varies a lot. So there are some times where you completely forget about it, where you just go on with your life and it doesn't really have a very big impact on life. And then there are times where it's a big thing. So it wasn't until, I think, kindergarten, first grade, something like that, where we had to like draw family trees. That was my first ever experience with me being donor conceived and being talked about with other than my family. So I had an experience in school where we had to draw these family trees, and my mom is a doctor in genetics. So family trees and how you draw them correctly from a doctor's point of view is something that we were quite familiar with from home. So I explained to my teacher that I actually couldn't draw this family tree because I was donor conceived. And so my genetics I couldn't really tell what and how, so I could only draw like my mother's side of the family. And I think the teacher was, also it was a bit different time back then. It wasn't something you talked about. And but I think she was quite shocked and also maybe thought it was weird that I knew this much. So she thought that it must have been something that I just made up. So she called my parents at home and told that I was going around telling stories, lying in school to make me seem more special. They had to explain to her that it was actually true. And that was the first time I was met with like people being a bit skeptic about my donor conception. And they've always told the story like something, and my mom always says that I've been kind of proud of it because it made me special. So I think I was really, I didn't really understand her reaction. And after that, I took the book to school and explained my class that I was donor conceived and talked to them about it and told about my conception. And I must say the other children did not care at all. I think they didn't understand, and I have a mom and a dad, I have siblings. They were just like, don't know what you're talking about, don't care.
I love that about children in particular. It's just like, you're the person stood in front of me and that's what I'm taking you for. So yeah. Brilliant. That is brilliant. And I love the idea of, you know, you feeling special because of it. And I think you are special because of it. I think that all children are special. Let me just put that there first, you know, and they really are. And they're all absolute miracles. But when you have tried so long and been through so much, you know, and, you know, like I could list the things, like everyone listening knows all of the things we've done, whether it's emotional, whether it's financial, whether it's physical, you know, we have all been through so much. Like, you are special, let me tell you, because I know, because I've got a special one here, you know, and they are over and above any other child. They are more loved. We did work harder. And yeah, they are special. You are special because of it. And I hope that you feel like that very, very much. Did your extended family know everything? I'm assuming so, but...
Yeah, they did. It hasn't really been something that we talked a lot about, I think. So I guess I've always known that they knew, but I haven't. For example, my grandparents, I don't recall ever talking to them about it, but I know that they knew. And I think the thought of knowing that I could talk to them about it if I wanted to was enough. But I've never really, no, they've never been a situation where I felt like it was needed. And I've always just known that I was just as much part of the family, also my dad's side of the family, as then Iris, the twins, or the rest. So yeah, I think, yeah, no, we haven't really spoken about it, but yeah, they definitely knew.
It's amazing that you are so open about it. And I have no doubt that that can take its toll sometimes as well, and perhaps bring up questions within yourself that not necessarily that you hadn't considered before, or perhaps there are, but more that sometimes you can't almost switch off, you know? How has that, the recent really supportive, I hope, attention on Instagram and with your book release, like, it does mean... not that you can't get away from it, but do you know what I mean? That you can't switch off. How does that feel?
Yeah, I think most of the time, I as a person is not very concerned about what other people think of me. I think that is really, really important in this journey, because I think it would be too hard on me otherwise, because I do receive a lot of great messages and people are so nice to me. But when you get a negative comment about something that is so personal as this is, it's really, really hard. And I think if I was someone who cared a lot about what other people might think and might, what impression they might get of my family and I think it would be even harder. So it does affect me when there is something. But I feel like if there is something, I can talk to my family, they are really supportive, and then I can reason myself out of it. And also I get this huge amount of love from everyone else, and then I just try to focus on that. And yeah, but it is challenging also being a big part of my personality and yeah, a big part of my life now.
Yeah. And it is amazing to hear that you have got a supportive family. And I know your mum has joined you for lives and things to kind of talk about.
That's
it
from my dad now.
And your dad as well. That's so incredible that you have got that support and they are like supporting your journey now and being open and helping, no doubt, hundreds, if not thousands or more of people who have been or are going through this right now. Can I ask, and you don't need to talk about this if you don't want to, but what kind of negative comments have you received?
Mostly that the negative experiences I've had are actually other donor conceived people, but people who do not share my positive view. And in some way, even though that is not my intention, they feel like I'm taking something away from them with sharing my positive experience. So some of them might be fighting to, for example, remove the option to have an anonymous donor. And they feel like me communicating that I'm not unhappy with having an anonymous donor is somehow ruining their message. So I think it is a lot of donor conceived people who have been really hurt in life from the choices that was made for them. And they kind of take it out on me. Maybe also because I don't know, they might be jealous of the way my family handle things. I don't know. I try to understand, and I also try to say every time that I'm sharing my story and my experience. I can't talk on the behalf of every donor conceived individual, but I don't want to go out and share something that I do not have experience with. So I only talk from my own perspective, and yeah, but I think they feel like I should also explain about the negative perspectives of donor conception, but it's hard for me as I haven't really felt them myself. So I feel like it must be their battle to express the things they have experienced in their life, and then I will try to share mine. Yeah, but I'm very sad for them. I really feel with them, but I can't really change anything for them either.
You're right that they're like, ultimately they're kind of commenting negatively towards you and is coming from a place of pain in their part, unfortunately. And that's incredibly sad for them, but it doesn't make it fair that they are kind of attacking potentially you, you know? So I'm sorry that you're experiencing that. And you are 100%, as you say, you know, and everyone who comes onto this podcast, but obviously in the work that you do outside of this, like this is just one conversation, you're speaking your truth. And yeah, you know, like you would like to think that no one could kind of, you know, berate you for that, although obviously, like we say, it is more about them than about you, in fact. I was once at a Donor Conception Network, which is a UK charity supporting people through donor conception, and they were talking about anonymity and how it wasn't necessarily thing anymore, and I feel hesitant even saying this, but because of different websites that you can trace your genes and that kind of thing and do your ancestry. Do you have any opinions or thoughts on that at all?
I think it's really, really difficult because obviously from country to country, legislation is very different. I know that I think we are on a path where anonymity is not really an option anymore. Like, it's so easy to get tested, but obviously the donor or donor siblings or something like that in that relation to them also needs to take one of these tests for the donor conceived individuals to find out anything. Actually, I think it's very hard for the donors. I think that they can't really rely on, they make a choice at that state in life, and maybe they might regret it, and then they have the option to do something different, and that is great. But also, I think it's hard that you cannot protect the donor's choice, actually. That it can be a shame, but I think the genetic testing, as I've experienced, actually a lot of people use it to track down half siblings. And for that, it is great. And it is a really, really great opportunity for them. So I think it's hard to answer, I guess, because there are ups and downs and pros and cons to it. Yeah,
totally. And that does depend on who you are within these relationships, doesn't it? Like you say, because it has an impact on not only the donor, not only the parents, but also the child as well. And actually, that's something, you know, like we're in the middle of fertility treatment right now. We've got Ren, who isn't donor conceived, but I'm just kind of imagining kind of with her, if she is to be an only child, which we don't know yet, the idea that if she were donor conceived, that there might be siblings out there for her, you know, and there's something quite comforting in that for one person. And like you say, for another person, not so much. And they wouldn't necessarily want that. It all does depend on how many people within these kind of groups of people we're talking about actually submit their genes, of course, like, so there's no guarantees. But I just thought it was a really interesting, like at that point, we didn't have Ren. And so donor conception was definitely something that was certainly in my mind. And I just thought it was really interesting that actually, like, just that whole concept, like you say, that the anonymity isn't necessarily guaranteed, and it's something that we really need to be mindful of potential changes in the future as well. So that's kind of why I wanted to mention it. I don't want to scare anyone or you know, like, by talking about it. I just, for me at that point in time, it was just really, it was food for thought, which is why I've mentioned it now. But if you are considering donor conception, like, there is a lot of support out there for you. There is a donor conception network. Defining Mum is doing amazing work with her Path to Parent Hub, and there are more and more people kind of sharing their stories. Is there support out there for donor children that you're aware of?
No, I haven't. I haven't really experienced anything. I think there are some networks, but again, I think it is more for the people hurting, and they aren't really very happy about someone like me coming in. Yeah, so not really that I have experienced, but also I think one of the things, I also made a post about it recently, is that donor conceived people who feel like I do live a very, very normal life, and their conception doesn't have a very big part in everyday life. So I think that they might not need that support group as much as the one struggling. And I also think that is why we don't hear as much from positive donor conception stories. So I have a girl who's also, she's my age, and she's also donor conceived, but with two moms. And actually, I went to school with her and I had no idea about her conception story. And then when I started to share about mine, she reached out. And she hasn't really been sharing much, but now she will start sharing a bit also through my channel. And I think it's really, really amazing.
That is amazing. And you're so right. Yeah, if it's not a big deal, like, people aren't necessarily going to want to talk about it or need to talk about it or feel like it's something that people will necessarily want to hear. However,
that was how I felt in the beginning. And also sometimes I can feel like when I started my Instagram, I was like, Jesus, is this even something that people want to hear? Am I just bothering a lot of people out there?
Well, people only follow you if they want to, ultimately, yeah. I would say. They can pick and choose, you know. So the fact that you have got over 2,000 followers already and you haven't been doing it that long speaks volumes to the fact that people do want to hear it. I think it's fascinating. I think it's incredibly brave of you. I think that it is, you know, going back to my example, I think you will be bringing so many people so much peace and education as well. Like, how do I do it right? How do I do it well? And obviously there's no guarantees for anyone, but if we can learn from experiences that have been positive, that have, you know, kind of allowed a child to grow up content and happy and loved and confident and open and you know, like that, oh my gosh, what anyone wants, that's what everyone wants, isn't it, ultimately? And your parents have done an incredible job for sure. And you're sharing that gift with so many other people. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking to me. Just before you go, for those who might be interested in your book, can you tell us a bit about what they can expect from it?
So I originally wrote the book in Danish, and it is about my family and our like story. It's kind of like a chronological story, and also explaining a bit about how I felt during my teenage years. The story I also told with school is in there, and yeah, just different kinds of experiences where my donor conception played a part in our family. And then the second half of the book is fertility experts from Denmark, like doctors and professors, and also couples therapists, about how infertility can impact a relationship, what you can do, stuff like that, and why. Also someone commenting on why fertility is decreasing as it is. So yeah, it's like two parts, my story and then the expert part. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's been translated to English, so it's also possible to get a copy in English.
Brilliant. But it will be useful for people at all different stages, really, because I think that often, even with the podcast, I know people who find it when they are finally parenting. But listening to stories of people who are pregnant and hearing how they're feeling can be really validating for them. So whether someone is trying to conceive, at which point I'm sure the fertility information as well will be really useful, or for those who have donor conceived children already and are parenting them, you know, definitely your story, but there still might be other information that's important to them as well. Brilliant.
Yeah, I hope so. And I really just hope that if one family can benefit from our sharing our experience, that is just all worth it to me.
Oh, well, I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that that has already happened, that you have achieved that, yeah, multiple times over already. So thank you so much, Emma, for joining me. I really, really appreciate you sharing. And all the links to everything, your Instagram, your website, your book, and all of that will be in the show notes so people can come and contact you and find out more about who you are and kind of what you're doing and the amazing change that you're bringing to the world. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.